back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Spencer McLaughlin, Locked on Ducks podcast, does a great job. He is also one of the broadcasters for Southern Utah. Southern Utah football last night, they were at Rice-Eccles Stadium. It was Utah, Southern Utah, 49-0. My prediction was 45-0. I apologize for being wrong, Spencer.
You know, I'll forgive you on that. You got to work on your score predictions through week one so far, John. I think you're a little rusty, but just like every football team, you're working out the kinks, and that's all right. And I'll just overlook the fact that you predicted, though unfortunately accurately, my T-Birds would not notch a point on Thursday night. But I think everybody understands how that game comes about, why it comes about, and how it's supposed to go.
Yeah, amen to that. Nobody more nervous than me as Southern Utah is lining up for a fourth quarter field goal, deep field goal. I'm going, come on, miss it. No. Let me ask you, man, before we get to talking about the Ducks, atmosphere at Rice-Eccles for an opening night, what was it like?
It was good. You know, I thought that for a game that Utah was favored by 40 points in, you got just about a sellout crowd. The student section was great. You know, early on, I thought they were bringing the juice. You could definitely feel them on third down. It won't be the same level that you'll see when, you know, a big opponent comes to town throughout the course of their now Big 12 schedule. But certainly I noticed it being on the radio broadcast for Southern Utah in the booth up there. And the folks in Salt Lake City, shout out to them. They do a great job making sure that I had all the accommodations that I needed and was squared away to go. And it's a great environment, you know, and one day I'd love to be there for, you know, a game like I think a USC from 2022 or, you know, any of those big games where you really feel that nighttime Utah crowd, maybe a little crispier air as well. But it was a lovely day for football. And, you know, believe it or not, I actually liked a couple of things I saw from Southern Utah that gave me optimism throughout for the rest of the season. But I think you looked roughly how they should have.
Cam Rising, I was watching him a little bit. The fans holding their breath as he runs around it in Utah's uniform.
Yeah, every time he took off to run, you could have heard a pin drop in that stadium. And then when he popped back up after, you know, taking a little hit or sliding down or avoiding a hit, you kind of heard everyone just release their breath. Oh, thank goodness. And I think it's understandable. You know, this was a good Utah team last year, but it was not a conference championship capable one without him in it. And I don't think they are conference championship caliber without him this year once again. Most teams cannot win a conference championship with their backup quarterback. That's a tough thing to try and ask. And though I think Utah's team is really good, I think Big 12 is too deep. So, yeah, they have to keep him upright, but, you know, I thought he moved well. I don't think he moved the same way he did pre-injury, and I think he was, in terms of passing the ball, a little bit rusty. You know, he missed a couple of throws and didn't look quite fully settled. I think it was really important, frankly, that Utah had this game against SCU to get his feet wet again playing live football, because everyone's got to remember, John, it's been 1 year and, you know, over 7 months since he played a live football game. And even for a guy who's been around college football as long as him, that's a long time. That's a really long time. And, you know, he got hit a couple times and took off running in a few instances like we talked about. And I thought he looked fine, but certainly he's going to face stiffer competition this year.
Spencer McLaughlin is our guest. Spencer, let's pivot to Oregon. I've been talking to Oregon fans about this transition, the Big Ten. 20,000-foot view for you. What questions do you have about Oregon's team in this season?
How does Dylan Gabriel look compared to Bo Nix? Everything else around Gabriel is essentially the same from last year. You lose Troy Franklin, you lose Jackson Powers Johnson, and that's about it. Now, those are high-end guys, and I think that Oregon certainly should feel better about their Troy Franklin replacement, the former five-star wideout from Texas A&M, Evan Stewart, then, you know, what's happening on the interior of the offensive line. That's one of the questions that I'm looking for with Indiana transfer Matthew Bedford likely out on Saturday with an injury, but might be back a little bit sooner than we thought, because the early reports were he may or may not even be back by Big Ten play. But so the interior of the offensive line outside of the veteran Marcus Harper, I think, is the only real question. But, I mean, we saw all these wide receivers and tight ends and most of the offensive line last year with Bo Nix, and we saw how good it could be. So, you know, at that point, the pressure just falls on Dylan Gabriel to go out there and execute at the level that he's capable of and, you know, prove that he's worth the hype he's generated leading this Oregon offense going into the season. I think he's an incredibly capable and good quarterback. I've heard guys like Josh Pate and Joel Klatt say how much they think the system is better for him than what he ran at Oklahoma. I'm curious to see if that plays out. But, you know, we saw Bo Nix thrive and have the most accurate season ever in college football history last year with the same offensive coordinator and mostly the same pieces. And we'll see how Gabriel stacks up.
The bigger risk of Oregon losing big games or dropping one no one sees coming?
Oh, that's a good question. I'd probably lean towards dropping one no one sees coming, depending on which games you're overlooking. I think of a Friday night matchup at Purdue, and you know, I don't expect Oregon to lose the game. I'm going to pick them to win no matter what I see pretty much between now and that time. But I mean, do you think anyone picked Ohio State to go in there and get the doors blown off of them several seasons ago when they went to West Lafayette? Probably not. And I'm interested to see what the Boilermakers have gotten Ryan Walters' second year. I think Hudson Card at quarterback is fine. I don't think he's below average. I think he's kind of a standard Big Ten quarterback, which isn't a great league for quarterbacks, but I think he's, you know, capable enough. So that's one game. You know, Oregon's a double-digit road favorite at Wisconsin. I wonder if that line moves in either direction, frankly, by the time it rolls around towards the middle of November. Not too worried about an Illinois or a Maryland, for instance, both of which are conference games on Oregon's schedule this year. I'm not worried about UCLA. I'm not worried about Michigan State whatsoever, but you know, having Ohio State at home, Michigan on the road, if you're going to play both those teams, those are the splits you would want to have. And Oregon's favored in both of those games. I think they're going to win both of those games until I'm presented evidence to the contrary. So I think Oregon is in a really, really good spot to, you know, truly control its own destiny. You know, you win 11 games, you go into the playoff. It's just a matter of where you get seated. If you drop two games in the regular season, possible, though I don't think quite as likely, then you leave something up to chance. I think 10 and 2 probably gets you in, but yeah. No one can say that with any certainty, John, even in the Big Ten, because we haven't seen a 12-team playoff before, and the committee is going to act differently, or they could, compared to the 4-team era.
Spencer McLaughlin, you're the best. The score tomorrow for the Oregon game is 63-7. That's what I've got. Thank you for joining us, man. Appreciate you.
Thank you, John. I have 66-10. I look forward to gloating.